In this special edition of The Score, we look back at the events of November 22, 1963, and talk to two witnesses to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Don't go away. The Score will be right back.
You're listening to The Score from Bering Drift with your host, Rick Sincere.
Welcome to a special episode of The Score from Bering Drift. I'm your host, Rick Sincere. 55 years ago today, on November 22, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas. For Americans of my parents' and grandparents' generations, the moment when they heard the news became seared into their memories. For anyone born before 1960, where were you when you heard Kennedy was shot, is a question that can be answered instantly, directly, and in vivid detail. The news came as a shock to the nation. The first broadcast bulletin was transmitted by ABC Radio, interrupting regular programming across the country.
Terrific, if you're even good, where anyone at all.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin from ABC Radio. Here is a special bulletin from Dallas, Texas. Three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today in downtown Dallas, Texas. This is ABC Radio. To repeat, in Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today. The president now making a two-day speaking tour of Texas. We're going to stand by for more details on the incident in Dallas. Stay tuned to your ABC station for further details. Now we return you to your regular program.
NBC News soon followed. Older listeners may recognize the voice of staff announcer Don Pardo before anyone had heard him on Jeopardy or Saturday Night Live.
In downtown Dallas, President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy. She cried, "Oh no." The motorcade sped on. A photographer said he saw blood on the president's head. It was believed two shots were fired. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
CBS was not far behind. Walter Cronkite broke into the broadcast of a popular long-running soap opera, As the World Turns.
And now for the next 30 minutes, As the World
And I gave it a great deal of thought, Grandpa.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The circumstances on the ground in Dallas were fluid and confused, as this in-person report by NBC's Robert McNeil demonstrates.
This is an NBC News bulletin. Shots were fired near President Kennedy in Dallas. Here is a report from Robert McNeil, NBC News, with the presidential party in Dallas.
Several shots were fired as President Kennedy's motorcade passed through downtown Dallas. Crowds screamed and lay down on the grass. As the motorcade went by, police broke away and began chasing an unknown gunman across some railroad tracks. It was not known if the shots were aimed at the president. Repeat, it is not known if the shots were aimed at the president. This is Robert McNeil, NBC News in Dallas, Texas.
And here is a flash from the Associated Press in Dallas. The Associated Press reports that the president was seriously wounded. This is not confirmed. This is a flash. Repeat, this is a flash from the Associated Press in Dallas. They report that the president was seriously wounded by assassin's bullets.
NBC provided an update, but the situation was still uncertain.
NBC Newsroom in New York. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally of Texas have been cut down by assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas. We'll repeat that. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally of Texas have been cut down by assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas. They were riding in an open automobile when the shots were fired. The president, his limp body cradled in the arms of his wife, Jacqueline, had been rushed to Parkland Hospital. Flint Hill, a Secret Service agent assigned to Mrs. Kennedy, said he's dead as the president was lifted from the rear of a White House touring car, the famous bubble top from Washington. He was rushed to an emergency room in the hospital. Other White House officials were in doubt as the corridors of the hospital erupted in pandemonium. The incident occurred just east of the Triple Underpass facing a park in downtown Dallas. Reporters about five car lengths behind the chief executive were behind the autocade. Stay tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
Finally, just before 2:40 p.m. on the East Coast, Walter Cronkite delivered the grave news in what might be the most widely viewed bulletin in television history.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
Later in the day, Cronkite summarized the key moments of the events of November 22nd at the beginning of a long, long broadcast of the CBS Evening News.
This is Walter Cronkite with the CBS Evening News. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was assassinated today in the 46th year of his life and his third year as President of the United States. These are the circumstances of the assassination. The President and Governor John Connally of Texas were shot while riding in the presidential limousine through the streets of Dallas. The President was shot once or twice through the head by a sniper firing from a fifth or sixth story window overlooking the motorcade route. They were rushed to a nearby hospital. The President died about half an hour later at 1 p.m. Dallas time.
Later in the evening, NBC's Frank McGee made a prediction that became absolutely true.
There is this about this sort of thing, as staggering and as cataclysmic as it is humbling in its own way. It makes us all realize our own mortality and what humans we are. And it is safe enough to say, certainly it can be said by those who remember the death of President Roosevelt, that this afternoon, wherever you were and whatever you might have been doing, when you received the word of the death of President Kennedy, that is a moment that will be emblazoned in your memory, and you will never forget it. As long as you live.
The Score is produced by Bering Drift, Virginia's top site for news and politics. To learn more, visit beringdrift.com.
Flash forward 50 years to Charlottesville, Virginia, where two witnesses to John F. Kennedy's assassination appeared as guests of the UVA Center for Politics at the 2013 Virginia Film Festival. One of them was Wesley Buell Frazier, an employee at the Texas Book Depository, who drove assassin Lee Harvey Oswald to work that morning. That was a day that changed his life, he told me in an interview following the screening of the documentary film, The Kennedy Half Century.
That young boy that went to work that day, he has never come home.
Just 19 years old in November 1963, Frazier had to endure a brutal interrogation by the Dallas police, who accused him of being part of the assassination plot.
Well, they wanted me to admit to being part of the assassination, and I told the guy, I said, I'm not doing that. And I said, that's ridiculous. You know, in this country, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, but a lot of times you're guilty until proven innocent. Mm-hmm. And our forefathers didn't intend for our country to be like that.
Frazier explained that he had often driven Oswald from suburban Dallas to the book depository. Oswald's Russian-born wife, Marina, lived near Frazier's sister, while Oswald rented a room in the city. Normally, they carpooled only on Friday evenings and Monday mornings, and Frazier had pointed out to Oswald how it was odd he would need a ride on a Friday morning. Oswald had a long package with him that he said contained curtain rods. It turned out to be the murder weapon, a sniper's rifle.
It's a day like I've never seen before, and I hope I never see one again. It's a day that changed my life. I've never been the same. That young boy that went to work that day, he has never come home. And for many years, I wouldn't talk to anybody about anything because I was so scared of what they might do to my family. There's some evil people in this country. And when it comes to power and money, they will do anything.
Once he was taken into custody, the police interrogator handed Frazier a pre-typed confession and told him to sign it.
I started reading it, and it's saying that, you know, I knew about and was part of the assassination, and I said, that's totally false. I'm not going to sign that.
That response made the police officer angry, Frazier recalled.
When I wouldn't sign that, he drew back his hand to hit me. Matter of fact, he was standing just like you're standing on there, and I threw my arm up like this to block, to keep him from striking me. And he got so mad when I told him, I said, I'm not signing that. And I said, there's policemen outside this door. Before they get in there, you and I are going to have a hell of a fight. And I said, I'm going to get some good licks on you. And I think for one time in my life, I think I scared the hell out of the man. Because I turned the tables on him, because that's what he did. He badgered and beat on people to make them sign confessions. And I think he found a kid that wasn't scared of him, and I think it scared the hell out of him.
Even though Frazier was what he called a young 19 at the time, that interrogating officer...
He didn't know what I'd been through before I got there.
You're listening to The Score from Bering Drift with your host, Rick Sincere.
The other JFK assassination witness who came to Charlottesville 5 years ago, only a couple of weeks before the 50th anniversary of that tragic event, was Tina Towner. She was the youngest person who photographed events at Dealey Plaza in Dallas as President John F. Kennedy's motorcade drove by. Seconds before the assassin's shots rang out, the 13-year-old's home movie camera ran out of film, but she captured the President and First Lady's car just as it turned the corner from Houston Street to Elm Street. Like Wesley Buell Frazier, Towner, now known as Tina Towner Pender, came to the attention of law enforcement authorities. The author of a 2012 book called Tina Towner, My Story as the Youngest Photographer at the Kennedy Assassination, Pender described what happened to the short piece of film she took that day in Dallas. Note that this is not the more famous Zapruder film, though it seems to have undergone similar scrutiny. The raw footage from her home movies, she explained, was processed by local law enforcement authorities, who had put out a call for any movies or still photographs that may have been taken by onlookers but had not been developed yet. Her family did not receive the reel back for several weeks. I asked her if, when the processed movie film was returned to her family, did they have any sense that it might have been tampered with?
Not at the time, other than it was on a reel, it was on the end of a reel of home movies. So we knew we were going to have to watch the whole reel of home movies before we got to the assassination part. And when we got there, it ran out. And there was no assassination film. And for a few seconds, we thought we didn't have it, that they didn't send it back to us. But it had been cut from the rest of the film, and it was there. It was just not spliced onto the end. It was just loose at the end of the. It was on the end of the reel where it should have been. It was just not spliced onto the rest of it. So my dad was able to splice it back on, and then we watched it.
About a decade later, Pender and her father took the film to a lab to be examined at the request of some investigators.
In the 70s, my I was contacted by somebody who wanted to look at it in a lab, and my dad and I didn't let it out of our hands, so I went with him. It was a lab, Jack White, in Fort Worth, and he took it to a lab, and there were about three or four people there looking at it while I was there. And they turned to me and they said, "Did you know that there's a splice in your film?" And I said, and this was just the assassination film. This wasn't the whole movie. And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, there's a jump in the film and there's a splice." And I said, "No." So they showed it to me. And it's as they're turning the corner, as the limo's turning the corner, you see a jump in the film. We knew that was there, but we just figured it was some sort of a blip in the processing or something. And it was spliced together. You could see where it was spliced, and it was not using materials my dad would have. It was more professionally done, and it was hard to see the splice when you looked at it. But anyway, I don't know who did that, and I don't know when it was done either, because that was in the 70s, and of course the authorities had it in 63, and then Life magazine had it in 67, and then I found it in the 70s.
Later in the 1970s, Pender was questioned by investigators for the U.S. House Select Committee on Assassinations, which concluded that Kennedy's assassination was the result of a conspiracy and not the sole responsibility of Lee Harvey Oswald. She said her encounter with them seemed peremptory.
That was brief. They called and said they wanted to bring them the original film and the slides that my dad took. So I was working, and they came to my office, and they maybe visited, and questioned me for about 15 or 20 minutes, maybe 30, but it didn't seem like that long. And the questions were not very deep or probing, and it almost was like they just wanted to get it done with and take the film and leave.
Despite the attention paid by law enforcement and investigators over the years, neither Pender nor any member of her family who witnessed the assassination was called to testify before the Warren Commission, which was established by President Lyndon B. Johnson to investigate the killing of his predecessor, John F. Kennedy. 3 days after the assassination, with the country draped in black, President Kennedy's funeral mass was celebrated at St. Matthew's Cathedral in downtown Washington, a short walk from the White House. He was buried in Arlington National Cemetery on November 25th. Army bugler Keith C. Clark played taps after a 21-gun salute echoed through the Arlington Hills with an unforgettable broken note. Reporting for The Score from Bering Drift, this is Rick Sincere. Thank you for listening.
Do you have an idea for future episodes of The Score? Write to host Rick Sincere at ricksincere@gmail.com. The Score is produced by Bering Drift, Virginia's top site for news and politics. To learn more, visit beringdrift.com.